welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape has pretty much everything John Deere up there. Go up and see them. We got tractors, implements, parts, sales, service. They do it all. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at PapeMachinery.com.
I like the way you don't breathe between your name and the Pape Machinery thing.
Yeah, that's a talent. That's that's a radio thing.
You don't take
thing.
A breath in between, so you don't give me any opportunity.
You have to do a lot of school to learn
You don't
that.
Give me any opportunity to smart off.
No.
You're ruining my smarting off.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, today we're going to do part two with Dr. Chen. We were going to chat with Australia today, but Australia had some sort of a situation.
Shark attack.
That was it. That's totally it.
Yeah, that was
That's
it.
That's our story. We're sticking to it. And Dr. Stuart Reese will be on next week, and that will be fun. So let's see. Who gets free advertisement of the week?
Well, I don't know. Wasn't prepared for that.
Who have you dealt with this week who deserves free advertisement?
USA Tire down on Hartnell Avenue.
Perfect.
Did us a solid on some tires. Real easy to work with. Go over and see them. I don't have their address and phone number, but you can't miss them. They're just
they're right by Holiday Market.
Yeah, they're just west of Holiday Market there on Hartnell. And you go and see them, and they got great prices on tires. And if you have a balance problem or anything like that, go in and see him. He'll fix you right up.
Because I had a balance problem. I go, Bill, go see the tire guy.
Yeah, she kept falling down, so I had to send her to the tire guy and get her balance.
Send her to the tire guy.
Yeah.
So he goes over there. So it isn't like a one and done, you know? Go get your tires, and it's like they don't know you when you come back. Oh, I've never seen you before. The other thing is they share the parking lot with Robinette Automotive.
That's right.
And they are spectacular.
Yeah, they're a great outfit, too.
You can't go wrong. So how many A's in his tire? Two A's? Three A's?
USA.
Oh, he's USA.
USA. There's one A there, I think.
Sorry.
I can check the spelling.
I was going to look it up so that I had an address.
No.
I was thinking...
One A.
I was thinking AAA storage because we use them, too. What the heck? Everybody wants to be at the front of the phone book.
Yeah.
And all right. We'll have that for you next time. Beginning of the next hour. So Liam, our engineer, got Dr. Chen on the line? We do.
Yes.
Nice.
Hey, Dr. Chen, how are you today?
Very good. How about you?
Got that extra hour of sleep, so, you know, of course, everyone's better today because...
Well, yeah, we got the extra hour and still got it here late, so, we can't be helped.
Yeah, I know. It turns out I've got the webpage messed up, too, so... it still shows Dr. Reese. Meh, I will fix it while we're talking. But Dr. Chen, why don't you tell people something about your bio that like I don't typically tell them because I don't have it on the maybe I don't have it on my list. Fun fact.
All right. Well, I came to the United States in 1981, I was one of the, among the earliest, students that, came to the United States after, China was closed, from 1947, throughout the Cultural Revolution. Then China then start to open up after the, not right away, but after a couple of years of the Cultural Revolution, and then it start to open first to visitors, and then allow students to study, in non-communist country. Now, China was open to communist country, so before 1979, for the first 30 years, from 1949 to 1999, students from Chinese student can only go to Soviet Union or Czechoslovakia or other East European communist country to study. So from 1979, some student then allowed to go to, you know, the capitalist, the evil capitalist country. to study. But at the beginning, a very small number. So I was one of those, among the very small number of students came to the United States. And so I was very much a, you know, communist student when I first came to this country. And then I buried my head into study. And really didn't, first of all, I did not have much interest in politics. And second, you know, people in China are trained not to, risk yourself in political things. So we were all taught not to be involved with politics until much, much later. I mean, just recent years, only recent years, even for myself, even though I started to involve in human rights activities since 1989. But I myself did not get to see what is that aversion of politics in Chinese, right, among Chinese. And that is anything that opposes the government is called a politics.
Oh.
Right? Anything that you conform to what government wants you to do is never called a politics. In fact, if you, the government actually encourage, induce Chinese people to follow the party. And if you conform to party thought, you are labeled politically progressive. So it was actually within the past few years that I realized, oh, okay, so politics is not defined by the kind of things you involved in, right? Rather, it's defined by whether you follow or conform to the government or oppose to government. Opposed to the CCP policies, only when you oppose or disagree with the policy, then you're called involved in politics. Right? If you support the CCP policy, not only you're not called involved in politics, you are actually rewarded. So anyway,
That's confusing.
Back to myself. So for the first few years, then I just buried myself. In research, by training, I was a biologist, and so I still am doing biology now. And I have my little startup, BioTech. But then, you know, by 1989, the 8th year after I came to the United States, a student movement broke out in China, and in Beijing, student stage hunger strike, calling out CCP to allow some freedom. And that got me, it really touched me, because I thought, well, I've been in this country for 8 years, so I take things for granted already at that time. And all of a sudden that I realized my fellow student in China for a little bit of freedom, they have to went on a hunger strike. And that really hit me hard.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. And at that point that I realized I cannot just then just bury myself into my own little world. And then I started to get involved in China-related affairs. And I have been active ever since then. And then in 1999, actually on May, I still remember the date, on May 2nd, 1999, I learned about Falun Gong and have been a Falun Gong practitioner or been practicing Falun Gong ever since. Then the Chinese government launched a persecution, a deadly persecution against 100 million Falun Gong practitioners in China to date. Several million people have been, persecuted to death. Unknown number, but they're a large number in, hundreds of thousands to that scale. Falun Gong practitioner are suspected to have died from live organ harvesting. Now, what is a live organ harvesting? They arrest Falun Gong practitioners, kill them while they are alive to get their organ.
Yeah, they're not harvesting part of their liver. They're taking, like, their heart out.
Right.
Things that you
and
need.
They kill them.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, not only the fact that taking their vital organ kills them, but also to cover their crime also would require them to kill, the people know about this, right? So
that's true. You can't very well imprison somebody for no reason and then let them go. That becomes kind of problematic,
I'm
sure.
And the reason they killed, not only they killed them alive, right, to have the best quality of organ when they, cut them up, they do not give any,
no anesthetic?
Right. Ugh. Right. Yeah, so that's maximum the pain. So,
wow.
Yeah. So then in 1990, this persecution started in 1999, 2 months after I practiced Falun Gong. I started to practice Falun Gong in May, and they launched a persecution on July the 20th. Then I, cases of practitioners being tortured and killed slowly leak out from China. And my previous experience in human rights, activism came in handy. I then started to collect, compile those information and submit them to the United Nations human rights mechanism. So the United Nations has some special rapporteurs to be in charge. Well, the United Nations put them in charge of monitoring human rights violations around the world. Collectively, they're called the Human Rights Mechanism. So I started to make cases to them, and so that get me more and more into activities that involve in human rights in China. And so that is my this track of life, the human rights activities and my concern, of China, And then also my activity require me to interact with world governments. And so I started to also pay attention to political life in the United States, particularly in the United States, but all generally in free world as well. And so I also start to make a lot of observation about the changes in the free world in general, but United States in particular, and I see, signs of country, free world country, particularly United States, being infiltrated by the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, and how this country has been induced to go astray from, its tradition.
Yeah, which is definitely a trend we wouldn't want to continue. And, it takes people like you that actually know, because a lot of times, when people say things like that and really have no firsthand experience, you get obviously, we get marginalized anyway. You're a conspiracy theorist, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's not a conspiracy because you lived it. So it makes it a little harder for them to silence you with that little thing. We have to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Shizong Chen. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
So, Dr. Chen, I'm curious, when you came here, I mean, I'm assuming it's a huge honor to be chosen, to have the academic excellence to be able to study abroad. So that had to be a big deal for your family and all that. But were you thinking, is that one of those things where you think, oh, good, I get out, I'm getting out?
No, not at all. I want to go back. I still want to go back. I couldn't.
Yeah, I would imagine you're kind of out over your skis at this point. So you come here and you're thinking, it's got to be just absolutely weird. I've heard many stories from people who have come here from China, and like June, and she said it took her like 10 years to figure out that we weren't pretending to be free, that we were actually deciding by ourselves, like when to go to the grocery store and stuff like that. We didn't secretly have someone telling us. Was it weird for you here, or were you already kind of familiar with what it would be like?
It's interesting you ask that. So my English is just very poor. Very, very poor. There was reason for that. I don't want to go into it, but that was because, I did not have a good teacher when I was in college, so...
Why my Chinese is so bad. That must be it. Thanks for that.
I thought his teaching was so bad that I boycotted his class.
Ooh.
And that was why, anyway, so when I first came to this country, I was barely here for, you know, a couple of weeks, not even 2 months, my classmates, I mean, my American classmates, asked me, you know, are you home? Are you homesick, or are you getting? Are you okay, basically? And strangely, even though I know very little English, I can carry on very little conversation. But I felt at home right away, and it's just a weird feeling. I guess my innate feeling for the freedom already at that point already sense that this, I'm fit for this. So that's what I told my classmate using my very poor English. I said, no, I don't feel stranger at all. I feel I was born here. That's what I said. I told them. So this is how I felt. I just feel I fit this naturally. It was like I was born here. I've been living here all my life. It felt like that. However, on the other hand, I had never thought of not going back to my country, China, because I knew at that time of being one of the very few people that has the golden opportunity to learn the advanced technology. It is my duty to go back to serve my motherland. So I never wanted to stay this country. I was doing academic, I was doing very well. And so my thesis advisor wanted to help me to stay in this country. You want to make a wrench for me to, so I can get green card, naturalize and all that. You know, I refused. In fact, after he made that suggestion a few times, I felt I was, because my classmates, well, my lab, you know, other people in the lab, they did the same because they really liked me. And so they start to all, you know, now I think maybe my boss, my thesis advisor, asked him to do it. Maybe, I don't know. But anyway, after some people talked to me repeatedly, I felt like I was insulted. And I basically just rejected it, and I said, why should I stay in you? This is not my country.
Sure.
My country is poor, but that's my country. Your country is rich, but it's your country. I want to go back to my country, serve my own country. So I was very patriotic, right? The reason I cannot go back, anyway, if China let me go back, now I'll go back right away, tomorrow. Because right? That's where I came from. That's where I am more needed. I mean, yes, I can make contribution in this country, but this country would need less of me. You know, that country would need me more. It's the government that wouldn't let me go back.
Yeah, when did they decide that you were too scary to readmit?
Well, pretty much since I get involved in, you know, what I said earlier, politics.
Sure.
Yeah. Because I was very well known in China, in fact. In my university, the university I came from, I was one of the known stars, you know, in the university. And when people back there learned that I become an activist, in fact, a high-profile activist, they were startled and said, what? Chazal got involved in politics.
You were voted least likely to become a political activist in your college class.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, after the June 4th massacre in 1989, with overseas students' anger, the government then sent some delegation to go to universities. You know, because at that time we have large number, right? Actually, a fairly small number. There, in 1989, around this country, there were probably 40,000 Chinese students, but they're the best students from China, and so most people were, you know, shocked and upset about the massacre. And so they sent a delegation to, you know, universities to try to kind of explain away the persecution. And then trying to get us to go back, right? So I remember I was at one of the meetings, you know, at the our UCSC, all the Chinese students was called into a meeting with them. And so I went. And so the head delegation trying to explain away the massacre, and then in the end he said, "You're all welcome. You have no danger. You know, as long as you correct your understanding, your attitude towards the persecution, then you can still we still welcome you to come back. You can come back safely." And then I interjected, all the students, there were maybe several hundred of us there, maybe, I think, around 200 to 300, right? Among all the students, I interjected. I said, what if we do not change our attitude? And he had no answer. Yeah. So you have to change. You have to conform, or else you cannot go back. And that's why I cannot go back. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, have people from your family, are they allowed? They're probably not even allowed to come and visit you, huh?
Well, not at the beginning. I was a student, and at that point, they couldn't come to visit me anyway. So it was later when I become a U.S. citizen, then I can apply for the visa for them to come.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So eventually my father came, to see me. Yes.
Well, you know, it's funny. We kind of skipped over the part where the Chinese government said you didn't get to come back. I mean, we hear those stories all the time, but I mean, how does that really work? Do they send you a text message, a letter? Do they show up at your house? Is it, you know, the smoking man from the X-Files? Like, how do you know you're on the naughty list?
Yeah, I was on a short. So there's a blacklist.
Oh.
Right? I was on the shortest blacklist. If I want to get a visa to visit China, I will get rejected. They wouldn't give me a visa.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do they send you a letter and tell you, hey, by the way, you're on a list, or do you apply for a visa and then get turned down and figure it out?
Oh, no. They have a way to tell you. They have a way to tell you.
That's kind of what I was curious about.
I remember in 1998, a year before I pick up practicing Falun Gong, a friend of mine who was also on the blacklist was able to go back to China to visit her elderly father. But of course, the Chinese police visited. Well, they wouldn't call that visit her. They say, you know, they invite you out for, you know, tea drinking, right?
Sure.
So, yeah. So it's like a coffee, right? They invite you out for a coffee. So
Hi, I'm here from the secret police, and I'd like to go have coffee with you. I just can't. Yeah, I'm just having trouble with the mechanics. Like, how would that? How does
that? You open your cereal box in the morning, and there's a note in there.
I know. That's what I'm thinking. My imagination's running wild.
They actually call you.
Oh,
yeah. It's that blatant. Yeah.
They just call you up. Hi, I'm so and so from the CCP, and we're going to go have coffee because I have some news.
Yeah, at that point you're in China, so you know they do anything they want. So they invited my friend to out for a tea and ask all kinds of things about her, and in particular ask about, you know, your political attitude, et cetera, et cetera. So she came back. And first thing she did is call me up, and she said, "Don't come back yet. Okay, you're still unsafe." I said, "How do you know?" And she said, "Well, among the first things they ask about me is your name."
Oh, yeah, that's kind of a dead giveaway.
Yeah, so they have a way to let you know.
Yeah.
But eventually I went back. I did go back to China for 6 hours. A few hours. So that is by no choice. So that was Christmas vacation time. I went to Hong Kong to attend a Falun Dafa cultivation experience sharing conference. So Falun Gong practitioners every now and then would get together for a conference for them to share their experience in their cultivation, right? So Falun Dafa cultivate self-improvement, following the principle of truth, forbearance, truth, compassion, or benevolence, forbearance. So it's a three words, three characters, three words. Truth, we're supposed to speak no lies, right? Forbearance, you're supposed to be tolerant. When other people take advantage of us, we're not supposed to fight back. We're supposed to tolerate. Very much same like Christian values. And compassion, love, others. Right? So those are the moral principles. The moral guidance that we follow. And so we would run into daily issues. How do we apply those principles to guide us throughout the day? And then, of course, we would get rewards from this cultivation. So the experience sharing conference is about this. How we conduct ourselves, our experience. Right? So that's called experience sharing conference. At that point, because the end of the 1999, the persecution has already started in July. And so I went to Hong Kong to participate in that conference. So before I go, I made a point to call my travel agency and to ask if I need apply for a visa to go to Hong Kong, and I was told, no, you don't need to. Right,
so, as a matter of fact, we'd like you to go there so we can make you stay there. Yeah.
No, Hong Kong at that point, 1989, still is a you know, free port. You can, you know, you don't have to.
You can still go in and out.
Yeah, it's still going in and out.
All right.
That was my
hold that point. Thought. We're over long overdue here. I was fiddling around. I got all wrapped up in the story. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Shizong Chen. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
For the games people play now, every night and every day now, never meaning what they say now, never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine. Whoa, la da da da. Talking about you and me.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I pay the price. All I want is to be left alone in my average home. But why do I always feel like I'm in the twilight zone? And I always feel like somebody's watching me.
I couldn't resist. Sorry, blue humorless interlude there. Back to the story. Oh, my God. Okay, so they said you could go to Hong Kong.
So I went.
Yeah.
So I went in okay, but at the custom, right, they said, well, you have to go into mainland China. I said, what?
Oops.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Ruh-roh.
No, that wasn't the deal.
You're like, wait a second. That's not on my itinerary.
What? Well, yeah, that's not part of my itinerary. and the custom officer told me then this would be on your record because you have violated the, you know, immigration law. I said, how? I called my travel agent before I came. My travel agent told me that I didn't need the visa. I was told that that was correct. But that is on the condition that you were passing Hong Kong only as a transition point. That's not your end point.
Mm.
Ew.
If it's a transition point, then you don't need a visa. But if you just came into, if you just came into Hong Kong, and then leave, so this will be considered your end point of traveling. And so, because I was supposed to be in Hong Kong for a week, and so I asked her, so what can I do to remedy the situation, he said, well, you just have to go into China for a day or however long you want to. You only need a, stamp on your passport that you've been to China, mainland China. Okay, so you have a week. If in a week you did not go to China, then this will be on your record. You'll have a hard time traveling to any other country.
Oh.
So I have no choice. So after the the experience sharing conference, then I just say, what the heck? I'll just go to China. So I went with other Falun Gong practitioners. Other people passed the custom quickly. right? When they got to my path or scanned my name, right, I knew something's happened.
Uh-oh. Right?
Something came up in the screen, and they say, okay, you have to wait. So, all right, so I then was let into a room, wait there.
Uh-oh.
Well, I waited for, I would say, less than an hour. Right? Not quite an hour, but close to an hour. Right? They came in and they say, you're okay. So, I knew at that point I was, you know, eventually out of the woods. I was no longer in the blacklist. If I was in the blacklist, they wouldn't let me in.
Sure.
So something happened between 1998 when my friend told me, don't come back yet, and then by 1999, so I was no longer on the blacklist because I was not as active as before. So from 1995, yeah, there are several years that I was not as active as I before because by that time I was already disillusioned or disappointed about, you know, the future of China because I was watching China going through a destruction, right?
Yeah.
I saw China going through an environmental destruction. I saw China going through a cultural destruction. I witnessed China going through a morality destruction, and those destruction were irreversible. And so my dream of I don't think democracy can solve those, can recover those destructions. So my ideal of saving my country through pro-democracy activities died. So I went back to my academic work. I guess so the long period of lack of activity then get me off their blacklist. So that was why I was able to get into China. But that happened to be the gap.
Yeah, no kidding. Either that or they were blood typing you and trying to decide if they needed any of your organs. I'm not sure I'd ever scribble that off the list of options. That's creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, but that just...
It's like, oh, good, he's doing Falun Gong now. This stuff's going to be worth more money.
That was just... That year was just before I pick up another track of my activity. After that, I formed a Falun Gong Human Rights Working Group, started to compile and report situations or cases of human rights violation against Falun Gong practitioners. And that got me onto a bigger blacklist. And so,
you recidivist, you.
Yeah. At that point, they wiped me clean. They wiped me clean. Why did I say that? As I said, I was, you know, reasonably well known, in China. So there were, you know, articles or books about me, how, I was a model student for young student. I was their inspiration. Then so those are available on the internet, in magazines, for example. But then after I become, active again, in human rights activity, in fact, in United Nations, right, in world stage, I battled the CCP ambassadors there, and it happened several times. When I go there, they in the Human Rights Commission, they gave time to NGOs to speak about human rights issues. So, yeah, there were several occasions when I make statement there, the Chinese ambassador then tried to shut me down. It was a scene.
Oh.
Yeah, they failed. So, but that also get onto the news. So, you know, the Chinese government have to wipe me clean. So, now on the internet, you'll not see my name. So they.
You do or you don't see your name?
I don't.
Oh, that's how they wiped you clean. They made you invisible.
Right. So that's why I know, you know, I wouldn't be able to, you know, go back to China as well. But if they let me, I'll go tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. So, along the way, in the background, you have family. So is your family like, what are you doing? What the heck? Can't you just go to school and like come home?
Right.
You have to keep playing around with all this stuff.
Right. Yeah, they tried to send me a letter, tried to get me change my mind, and they tried to tell me that you must be misled by some other you must under bad influence. You should change your.
Those nutty Americans who got you all tangled up in a bunch of crazy stuff.
Right. So, but at that point, I'm about.
You kind of knew too much. That's the bad part. Once you know too much, you're sort of stuck. you can't unknow those things. Well, so just out of curiosity, do you think the letters from your family came because they really thought that, or because the government said, "Hey, you better write your son a letter"?
No, they really thought that.
Oh, okay,
they really thought that.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
I came here that way. As I said, you know, I came here young communist, because you grew up in that environment.
Sure.
And so,
what was your biggest surprise? Like when you came here, okay, so you've been brought up in communism. You thought that was totally normal, but you were thinking, well, there might be some other choices. You come here and you're like, what? What was like the greatest thing? You're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we don't have that in China.
Well, it's a process. It's an imperceptible process. In China, I was because I was given those information.
Oh, sure.
And so those information mold how you think. So when I come to this country, you get a different set of information. When I take in those information, it slowly replaced the old information and replaced the incorrect information. And I felt that a honest person will change. And I think I was an honest person. There are the people who, you know, even when they faced the new information, they deceived themselves. See, one of the things about deceiving is that a cheater, you know, may think he had, you know, deceived others without realizing that he must, the first person, he needs to deceive himself.
Yeah, that makes total sense too. You have to believe it if you're going to be convincing, which is why, you know, anytime you do things that require shading the truth, I always wonder, you know, when people have to do undercover jobs and stuff, that's, I think, why you wind up slurped into that. It's pretty hard to erase that.
Or so, you just become a Democrat and then. It'll all make sense.
Bill had to say it. Well, we've got to come right back. We're getting cut off by the news, but we have you as our hostage. You can be on our whitelist anytime. We'll be right back with Dr. Shizong Chen. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. Never compromise what's right and uphold your family name. You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything.